In the realm of high-stakes geopolitics, Operation Mainbrace emerged as a masterstroke of strategic maneuvering. As tensions simmered on the fringes of the Iron Curtain, the North Atlantic became the stage for a robust display of Western naval might. It was the autumn of 1952 when a coalition of NATO's finest naval assets converged upon the tempestuous waters. Under the watchful eye of intelligence agencies, the mission aimed to showcase the unwavering resolve of the Western powers against the encroaching threat of the Soviet Union. While the various international elements engaged in a number of expertly planned and executed maneuvers and exercises, strange reports started to roll in from both sea and air. Pilots and sailors reported sighting strange objects that defied explanation and couldn't be identified by sight or radar. Some of these sightings would go on to make it into the annals of Project Blue Book and were investigated by officials as soon as some of the pilots touched down on the airfields. This case file joined the theorists as they stumbled through the stormy North Sea in the Operation Mainbrace UFO sightings.
Welcome to a special edition of Alien Theorist Theorizing as we bring you an investigative episode in the case of Liar Liar, Who Cut the Wire? As we bring the trial of Zell to find out what the fuck happened and why he missed ATT Live and how he got repairs so fast within 24 hours. Did it
raise suspicions? On a Sunday.
Yes.
On a Sunday.
So we are having the trial of Zell.
This is Theorite's court.
Theorite's court. All right. So Zell, as everyone knows, missed the last ATT Live. So it fucked up we couldn't bring in the Cosmic Channels because Zell has the keys. What happened, Zell?
A lot of the details of the case are still under investigation, so I can't release the details.
Okay. All right.
But someone in my household may or may not have just ripped the fiber wire out of the wall because they didn't know what it was.
So explain this to me. Someone in your house is just willy-nilly ripping wires. Are they an expert on
it? We're renovating the house, right?
Yeah.
So stuff's getting moved, it's getting painted. Okay. And instead of asking the one person in the household who knows exactly what all that stuff does, right? Rather skip that step and then just remove it aggressively.
Is there other wires in the vicinity that have been removed aggressively, leading to someone to think that it's okay to just pull wires in the house?
No, it's just a fiber wire is just, for some reason, incredibly brittle. If you pull it, it just rips in half. And that's what happened. And then,
like, were we talking about like pulling for a little bit of slack or like was the intention to
like trying to like disconnect it without, you have to like, as a, like an optic cable, you have to like grab it and kind of like fedangle it out of the hole. You can't just like grab it like a power cord and go boop. So she just ripped it in half. Or they ripped it in half. I can't say who it was.
All right. The more interesting aspect of this case is how you got six-star service from a one-star telecom
on a Sunday.
On a Sunday. When you're like, we're good in the morning, boys. I was like, what?
Good.
I was like, I thought this was going to be a 30-day fucking turnaround.
By 8:30, you're back up and running?
I thought for sure internet's down all week. But I just, I called and I just kept going up the chain because they said, closest appointment's Friday. And then someone else was like, well, we can get you Wednesday. I was like, no, I need it like right now. It's a home business, need the internet. And eventually they said, all right, first shift tomorrow.
Even when it wasn't their failure.
I want to speak to the manager's manager.
No. Here's the part of the story where it gets a little different. Because I called the first time, said what happened, told the truth, was denied.
Yeah. That's
then I had to call back and say, this is their fault. This is their technical error. The cable does not work. And yeah. After back and forth in a while, they said, okay, yeah, it's, we get it. This is a home business because I have a registered business in the house. I had to like prove it. And then the guy came out, found out when he got there that it was not what I said it was. And I said, listen, man, it's the only way I could get it fixed. He's like, I get it. And he fixed it. He fixed it in 5 minutes.
This has got plunger gate written all over it to me. I don't know. It's going to have to go to the people. It's going to have to go to the people.
You got security cameras set up?
Nope.
Do you have a work order bill or anything like that?
Yeah, you got a work order bill. You got an alibi.
I got the guy's contact. And
let's get him on the line. Yeah, funny story, we have him on the line right now.
His name is Adam.
All right. Well, I guess we'll accept that. We were blown away when you said I'll be going tomorrow. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? There's no way he's going to be up and ready to go tomorrow. Moral of the story,
just lie and say it's their fault all the way until the guy gets there and goes, listen, it was my fault. Sorry.
Oh, so you're setting a precedent of lying is what you're saying.
100%.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
If you want service fast, from a terrible service provider.
Okay. So if you want service fast, but what happens if you want the night off? When you forgot about a scheduled programmed event.
Oh, you just ghost.
I love it.
Well, the convenient part was you're like, I have no internet and no data, boys. Sorry. No messages from that point on. I was like, what the fuck is that? His last sold message, again. It was like the text numbers he had left was going down. He's like, this is it.
No, I have data. when you max your data, if you have an unlimited plan, you get like you get the trickle data, so you can sometimes check your messenger.
Text messages just said
anyway, just fix
over fucking 45 minutes.
All right, I'll accept it. You're looking better than ever.
Yeah, you do. You look refreshed, rested.
I'm not. Well rested. Not even a little bit.
This is case file 284, Operation Main Brace. I'm Brayden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan, and I'm Andrew.
That was an extended intro. I wasn't prepared for that.
Well, we talked about that. We're like last night. We're like, oh, we'll grill them. We'll grill them at the start of the show.
We're talking about Operation Main Brace, which is actually like a bit of a more recent development, as like documents on this actual case file or declassified relatively recently. Operation Main Brace is a military exercise which took place in late September 1952, which is like months after, just a couple months after you had your Washington DC UFO flap, which was fun because I went back and through some of the like news articles of that Washington DC UFO flap, and I saw an actual couple articles that were referenced my town, like where I grew up.
I thought you were going to say my work. No. I was like, what?
So, I don't know if my work existed back then. Definitely not. But it was just kind of neat to be like, oh, like officers from this county, da 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 da. And I'm like, oh, neat. That's where I lived.
Because it's 52, right? Isn't that the same year as Project Blue Book? Like, this was a big year for UFOs.
Blue Book been around for a while, but yeah.
Blue Book's going.
Yeah, I think full swing.
But Operation, like the events that happened at Operation Mainstay are like
Mainstay.
What did I say?
Mainstay.
Listen, I've slept like 45 minutes every night.
But
okay?
We get it. And yeah, the start date of Project Blue Book was 1952.
Yeah. Boom.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, big year for UFOs.
That's what I'm saying.
And the events at Mainframe. Is that the one?
Mainbreak. No, Jesus. Mainbreak.
Fuck, it's Wendigo all over again.
Basically of like kick-started like or reignited the UK's basically interest in UFOs and like being like, okay, well, maybe we should take this seriously.
During this set of exercises, which were NATO exercises, which were performed,
the Allied Command Atlantic, the ACLANT,
which they were performing in an area of the North Atlantic, there was a number of actual UFO sightings that occurred during the same time. So, just to give a little perspective on what the size of Operation Main Brace. Like, this wasn't just a tiny kind of like one-off kind of thing. Like, this was the largest peacetime military exercise since World War II. Being staged in 1952, you have the Cold War starting to ramp up and, you know, the Soviet Union is already pretty much like public enemy number one flex at this point. Yeah, and
this is a huge flex on Russia being like, this, look at our military capabilities.
Yeah, because Operation Mainbrace was meant to simulate a Soviet invasion of Western Europe by sea. So they were getting all their, you know, they were showing their Navy power, getting out there and yeah, getting everybody at sea and being like, that, okay.
Like, the scale of this is like 80,000 military personnel, 200 ships, and 1,000 aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Full army.
Yeah. Like, yeah, boys. Yeah. Like, oh, buddy, fucking this is fucking game. This is G.I. Joe.
Yeah, like, I mean, you think
ridiculous, way to the danger zone.
I think, I mean, you basically, like, an aircraft carrier, at least today, like, the larger aircraft carriers are like 5,000 thing, like 5,000 people. So it's like, that's a couple aircraft carriers, like aircraft carrier fleets, multiple, you know, across each country, you know, international assembly of them. And this was all occurring like in the North Atlantic. So in the vicinity of Denmark and Norway, like up in that area. So on September 13th, one of the Danish destroyers called the Willemoes was participating in the maneuvers and was just north of Bornholm Island. So during the night, you had Lieutenant Commander Schmidt Jensen and several members of his crew reported that they had actually seen an unidentified object. And when they described this object, they said it was like a triangular in shape and that it was moving at high speeds, you know, toward the southeast. Now, all of that sounds like, okay, it's a triangular in shape. Like, you know, you could kind of be like, well, maybe it was a plane, night flyer plane. But interestingly, you know, one of the characteristics that kind of like puts it over in there is like they said this object emitted like a bluish glow.
Well, and had been a triangle, like, because we're not far from Roswell. Like, it's all saucers. Like, the triangle right. shape is like, this has got to be one of the earlier triangle shape UFOs we hear about.
And the other thing concerning would be that you're doing military exercises and you're like, who's that?
There should be no one up here.
Yeah, you're like, anyone? Is anyone flying up here? And it's radio silence. You're like, is this part of the war games?
Yeah.
No.
Commander Jensen, like when he, you know, observing the object, he estimated that speed at over 900 miles per hour, which is like, that's like 300 miles per hour faster than most of the aircraft that they have at this
point. Yeah, like the Sabre is like goes only 700 miles per hour as well.
Yeah,
like that's substantially
most aircraft
faster.
Haven't even cracked the sound barrier yet. Like, it's, yeah, you're aren't operating like above the sound barrier for very long at this point. So it's something moving that fast is of note. So, you know, calling out there, I mean, this is just one. Now there are more during this time.
Yeah. like one of the, like, I just want to interject with this one point is like, as this was kicking off, because again, 1952, big year for UFOs. You had Edward Ruppelt, the, you know, fucking famous with the Project Blue Book. He was like telling people, he's like, hey, while you're out there, keep an eye out for UFOs.
Yeah.
And then sure as shit, like this operation, like just countless encounters with unidentified flying objects.
Yeah, it was almost right? Yeah, it was almost like a bit of a joke. Like he said it almost like they were saying like kind of
yeah,
jokingly.
Tongue in
and
cheek.
It was just like, oh.
He's like, yeah.
And then it's like,
and then
oh,
he's
shit.
Like, oh, wait, everyone did?
Yeah. Oh, fuck. So yeah, like within the next week of during these exercises, there was like at least four major sightings by well-qualified observers of UFOs. So after this one, the next sighting of note took place on September 19th. And this is probably one of the most popular ones, or like the kind of most significant of the sightings, is you had a Flight Lieutenant Michael Sweeney, who is a staff instructor who had been based at the Royal Air Force's Central Flying School of Little Rissington, Gloucestershire.
It's like Worcestershire.
So Sweeney had been basically like instructing another Royal Navy lieutenant, David Crofts, and they had pretty much been taking like doing an exercise, which was essentially like kind of a like a cross country flight, and he had Royal Navy Lieutenant David Crofts like sitting in the back, and then it was you had Sweeney up in the front.
Well, it I want to just add that it never says he was sitting in the back. What it says is he was seated behind his student, because I had to look to see if that's how it was written everywhere, and it was. And then
what
it
do
just
you mean?
Gave me
like, are we
picture,
talking like ghost style?
Yeah, right? That's what I mean. Yeah. And he's like, you just gotta feel it. Yeah, you just gotta feel it, right? Like, yeah. the guy's like, oh, he's holding the choice. He's like, that's
just whispering in his fucking ear.
Yeah, there you go, big boy.
Oh. Get a little torn.
That's what I picture in my head, and I hope that's what everyone pictures
grab
when
the
they
shaft.
Look into this.
Pull it up.
Yeah. There you go. Pull it hard.
Just pull it, move it around.
Yeah.
So they were flying in a British Meteor fighter jet, and they were returning to the Topcliffe airfield from the exercises that took place over the North Sea at the time. Now, Sweeney describes that as the Meteor jet came through a layer of clouds around 15,000 feet, he suddenly... Well, his quote is, got the fright of my life because there appeared to be, smack in front of the airplane, three white or nearly white circular objects. Two of them were on level keel and one of them was canted at a slight angle to one side. I thought, God almighty, this is three chaps coming down on parachutes.
No, what it was a crescent moon, Jupiter and Venus in the sky.
Of course.
Slightly angled moon. We all know that. Every experienced Air Force pilot cannot tell the difference between the stars and the moon and UFOs. Right.
All lined up.
Well, these were, like, didn't he describe them as swaying back and forth like a pendulum?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's why he thought it was someone coming down, right, exactly. Like in a parachute.
Yeah. Wasn't like a leaf falling or something, right? Like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he thought these were parachutes like coming down because of the way that they were kind of like, yeah, kind of like arcing back and forth.
Wait,
like,
how high up was he?
This was he was saying at 15,000 feet.
I guess that's skydiving. Cold. That's where you skydive from, isn't it? 10 or 15,000 feet. Yeah. Be right at the top, but they wouldn't pull their parachute yet. If you had a parachute that high up, it would take you forever to get to the ground. You'd just be floating for 3 hours up there.
Boo, boo, dee, boo, dee, boo.
So when he went on to, you know, describe a little bit what he thinks, he said they were about like they were saucer shaped, like our plate shaped is what he was saying. They had this like slightly off white color and then that they seemed to like emit some type of fuzzy or iridescent light around their edges. So giving force them like, kind of like a, yeah, so force some type of, perhaps sounds like a kind of force field or field projection or something like that, or means of propulsion. But there were no visible signs of propulsion. Like there wasn't an exhaust. There wasn't anything like that. So like it's not a conventional aircraft in any way that looks like. He said that he didn't see what appeared to be any portholes or turrets or any of the other signs that normally would have identified an object as like a conventional aircraft, even viewed at like an unusual, even at a weird angle. Like you came in behind this thing and you're like, this doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before.
That's what everyone says when they come behind me. Like, what the hell?
I've never seen anything like this. Giant thing in the fucking way. I can't see anything.
Yeah. What is this? Is this a person? Yeah.
It's an eclipse.
It's nighttime.
When they got to they took the Meteor into a climb and they kind of decided that there wasn't really anything they could do about these things. They didn't know what they were.
I mean, what are you going to do? You're not just going to shoot them. So you're pretty strapped up in the air. Like you do a flyby, I guess,
buddy,
if you could.
Buddy from fucking last week in the dogfight would have went. He would have engaged.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
Gordo would have engaged
a couple times. Yeah, Gordo would have been fucking all over it. Yeah.
Well, these are British pilots. They're just a little bit more polite, I suppose.
A little bit more, yeah. Excuse me. Can you move, please? Identify yourself.
So, according to Sweeney, he's quoted as saying, I was too shaken by what I had seen and decided to call the exercise off and go back to base. I called up air traffic control at Rissington and said I had three unidentified objects fairly close and gave them my course. I understand later that there was a certain amount of pandemonium on the ground because they weren't used to having their own staff instructors calling up saying, we have got three unidentified objects in front. What do we do? They didn't know what to do either.
They're like, you're the one supposed to tell us.
Like, yeah, I can imagine, like, the, you know, they're calling air traffic control and they're like, we don't have anything up there? Like, what is going on? And it's just like exploding into like chaos and down there.
What I can imagine.
What is he seeing? God, you know, just like.
Well, I wonder if part of them too was like, is this part of this exercise? Like, is this a test? Like, I wonder if that was running through their heads. I'm sure it was. Like, is this, could this be someone else? And it's like, it probably takes a while to get to like every states. Is it you? No, UK? No. Like, who the fuck is it? No one? Like, what the hell is these things? Like, I bet it's a bit of a fucking pandemonium when this takes up, like when this happens here.
So when the plane had actually descended down to 5,000 feet and it started getting towards towards the airfield, there was actually crew on the ground that said that they spotted some type of like silvery circular object traveling several thousand feet above, or what they estimated several thousand feet above the meteor, but on its same trajectory. So still like, no, like kind of
it's
above it, just same
pacing
thing.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, just like we saw in the Gorman dogfight is they like, whatever these were at first, you know, in that one, they were evading and then it's like they paced them after. Right. And we're seeing that now, which is crazy because this is like one of the largest like military exercises of the time. And there's something up there that's just like, yeah, I'm just going to fucking pace this ally jet. What was it? Akbar? What was Akbar.
It? It's
what
a trap.
What was the acronym? Oh. What was the acronym for this thing?
Oh, Aklant.
Aklant or something?
Aklant.
Aklant. It's like, just going to pace the Aklant plane here.
So this is one of the few like actual, like official UFO reports that's actually preserved in the National Archives in Washington, D.C., where you have Royal Air Force Flight Lieutenant John Kilburn of 269 Squadron, who kind of reported from observing on the ground, said that this object began to descend toward the meteor, but it's like descent motion is what we get the description of it, swinging in a pendular motion, like, and he said similar to a sycamore leaf. So his actual report of seeing this thing.
So it's like flying like that kind of like up and down, yeah.
And
as it's going, which is, I mean, I don't know a lot about aerospace,
no
engineering and planes. Wait,
you've watched a lot of videos.
I feel like I say that every
week. You're an expert.
You watch a lot of videos.
You're a fucking expert.
That's what I'm saying. On planes, I'm an expert on looking at photos of UFOs and telling you if
it's a bug or not.
Right, if it's a bug or not.
Okay. That's fair.
And so I'm like, I don't think that's an ideal flight path for any kind of flight vehicle in flight. Seems like it would like be hard on it, difficult to do, tear it apart in the sky. I don't know.
I'm
just a mere man. It's a regular guy.
From that motion, Kilburn was saying that his first instinct was that this was a parachute, like that was a parachute. And then aside from that, he thought also perhaps it could be like an engine cowling that maybe had broken loose from a jet. So it was just kind of like falling down, you know, just like a piece of, sheet of metal kind of just like falling off.
Catching the light.
Yeah, just catching off and falling down slowly. But all of that kind of went out the window when this object apparently stopped suddenly in midair, then rotated on its own axis and then zipped off at, like an unmagical speed,
900 miles
over the horizon.
And you're like, that's the fastest parachuter I've ever seen.
And this whole sighting took place over about 10 minutes. The entire thing from start to end, when Sweeney saw them, and then down to when the object disappeared, apparently under its own propulsion and took off. It's like this whole thing was about 10 minutes. I mean, it's no Gorman dogfight at 27 minutes, but 10 minutes is a really long time when shit's getting really weird.
No doubt.
Yeah. Like that's not you got time to let people know and people are looking and other people see it.
So, so is that some of the stuff that was coming up in the, happening up in the air? You had Sweeney kind of calling down the control tower, but like what other things that were happening in the control tower, over at Rissington, let's see. They actually called HQ Fighter Command at Stanmore, which is near London. And this was, again, like this is the height or the beginning stages of the Cold War. And so with the fear of Soviet attack kind of already hanging over everybody's head, you had senior officers who were already like let's go defense alert. Let's get it. Like what's we
kill
have
it.
To be ready.
Kill it with fire. Well, doesn't matter what it is. Kill it.
What a better rebuttal than if
sir, it looks like a balloon.
Show of force.
Shoot it down. Shoot it down. Okay.
It's our bring goddamn it Corman balloon. The Corman balloon's back.
Yeah, Rusky balloon.
Yeah. See, the thing for me is I'm like, if this is a show of force, and like right when I started reading about this, why this military operation was happening, like part of me kind of linked the theory in a way of like, you know, we talk about Operation Paperclip, right? And Operation Osvikim, where the Russians were taking scientists. And it's theorized that they might have some sort of advanced, like had advanced aerospace engineers working on some sort of revolutionary plane or flight capabilities.
Propulsion systems,
and it's yeah. like, what? Yeah. So it's one of those things for me where I go, okay, they're doing a show of force in the Atlantic. What better little rebuttal than if you're going to fly your experimental craft that you know is just going to leave every single one of these things in the dust, right? So, and you're just like, go. And they're like, just to fuck with this.
So like, I thought about that too. That's kind of where my brain went. But at the same time, it's like, why would you want to expose your fucking, the ace up your sleeve, right? So I was thinking potentially yeah. maybe that's what this entire operation was about. Maybe some, like one of the, maybe the bigger, you know, the bigger powers in NATO knew about it, or maybe one of the countries, say the US, who are involved in Operation Paperclip, this was just maybe their plan the whole time. And what better time would it be to test this stuff?
Right.
Would be now, like, let's test it and see if they can pick it up, right? Let's see if, you know.
Like if our own people can.
Exactly, right? Like, let's test and see if our guys can fucking pick this shit up. Right?
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I never thought about that. A little CIA, classic CIA fake out.
Yeah.
So at the same time that you had Sweeney, you know, in his meteor, making their visual report, you also had a ground controlled interception radar in southern England, which was from Sopley. We're tracking actually an unidentified aircraft, which was moving across the southwest of England. So there's another, like a whole thing kind of going on here. So the controller actually alerted the commander of Royal Air Force Southern Sector at Redlow Manor. And we haven't really talked, we might have mentioned Redlow Manor at some point, but Redlow Manor is also rumored to be one of the places that, at least in the UK, that it is kind of like the UFO, that's like their Area 51-ish kind of thing. At least I've seen it.
Not their Roswell,
but like it's like the secret. Redlow Manor is like this big, huge. It's a large underground facility. It's like this huge mansion on top, and then it's like a bunch of saying, like tunnels down.
It's
there.
Roswell, but they drink tea.
Or maybe it's like their Dulce. Maybe it's like their Dulce base kind of like thing. I think it's also been.
I love it. It sounds like a fucking Netflix show that middle-aged women would love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you?
Except for the aliens.
What was it? Wardlow Manor?
Redlow Manor.
Yeah, you like you trick. Redlow? Yeah, like, have you seen? Oh,
this
come
week
on, babe.
On
let's watch. Yeah. A lot of romance. And then, you know, a little X-File meets, what's that other show?
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey. Yeah, right. Little that, little this, yeah. Right?
Yeah. But yeah.
This week on Redford.
You know, calling into them and, like I guess Redlow Manor at the time, and then I guess between Chippenham and Bath in Wiltshire, this was kind of like the like this is like Redlow Manor is like an underground bunker that had pretty much like all of the fighter plotting control room. Like it was everything that went through the air, they marked there.
Yeah. Okay. And when you think control room, like I, in my head, think computers, but this is like just, there's probably a lot of paper.
Well, it's probably a bunch of like models and stuff like that. It's just a big map and they kind of just like put stuff on it. Like
a lot of fucking little paper model planes that they just like push into their
map. It's just like a game of Risk pretty much.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just pushing pieces around. We're going to go over there.
That's exactly what it is. A bigger Hasbro, when was Hasbro founded? They probably gave, they're like, hey, can we get a big board of Risk?
Big version.
Like, yeah, sure.
A couple extra pieces.
It's like Risk, but bigger.
Yeah.
Genius.
So all of these unidentified blips were treated as hostile until they could actually identify what they were. And the sector commander actually gave the order to go ahead and scramble interceptors just in case, you know, I mean, better safe than sorry, right? That they're going to get fighters up in the air and kind of figure out what this is. So they had a pair of meteors who were on 24-hour quick reaction alert duty at RAF Tangmere, Sussex. And these ones took off and kind of directed them, you know, they directed them towards this unidentified radar target, you know, and they were calling down to Sopley. And like, according to the, I guess the late Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley, like officers in the filter room at Ludlow Manor were able to identify Sweeney's meteor on the plotting table. Like they had, you know, they had a model, I guess, like they had a model of his plane, like sitting there. We need a meteor on the map immediately. And like open up a little drawer.
I imagine there's like two guys, the guys on 24-hour call, like sitting by a fire with like tea and a cigar. And they're like, gentlemen, and they come to the table and he throws down like two fucking pieces that don't look like anything else. He goes, these just entered the airspace. They're like, we need you to go up right now. They're like, okay.
Yes, studio. What?
Yeah.
Indubitably.
Is it? Yeah.
So they had, when they were they're tracking these blips on radar, they said that they suddenly actually disappeared off the tube, like they off the, you know, the display that they had. And then, like from the distance that they went from the tracking of the radar, they estimated that these things were traveling at up to 1,000 miles per hour to go, like to get off of the radar so fast. Like it just kind of like, gone. And then, so the two meteors that they got up into the air actually followed the target, or they, you know, they put them on their trail, but they failed to make contact with this thing.
Which is like, how fast do the meteors go?
The meteors only go up to, I think 600 was like the top speed, like 680. They don't even crack the sound barrier. Like these things are early jets. So it's like, I think they went to like Mach 0.8 was like the fastest that they went. And so, yeah, like they weren't
bitch made.
Yeah, they weren't catching these.
And things. I just want to add that for them to get off the radar, that's the low end. They would have been having to travel at least 1,000 miles per hour to get off the radar in the time they did. They don't know the speed. That's not, they were traveling at that speed. That's, they would have had to at least been traveling at that speed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
So these are all the reports that are going on. And so again, like we said that Sweeney is pretty much like they called off the exercise. Like they've done, like, he's like, okay, you know, the instructor time is over. Like we're landing, like we're taking this thing down.
Yeah. Well, especially right. When he found out he was sitting right behind him, he's like, there's another seat.
So, I mean, both of the pilots were understandably stricken, but you know, it gets a little bit crazier when they actually, land, you know, when they come down there. But I think maybe we want to
just
take a...
Dan, you read my mind! Before we get there, we're going to take a short break. We're going to grab a beer. Be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back!
So when Sweeney and Croft came in and landed, like stuff just started kicking off like right away. It's like they didn't even get time to leave like the tarmac. Like as soon as they were down there, like their wing commander basically like sprinted out to their plane and then just like grabbed the pair of them and told Sweeney basically, go to your cabin.
Go to your cabin. You're not going to talk to fucking anyone.
Exactly. Like keep your mouth shut. Go to the cabin. You know. if you, yeah, like all your meals are going to be brought to you. If you want anything to drink, you're going to have to get in touch with somebody to go get them for you, which I assume is like
what you thought you saw, you did not see. Not in the fun Will Smith rap way.
Yeah. And, and Sweeney
forget
is like,
that shit.
Sweeney is like visibly rattled by what has happened here. So like, they're like, one of the first things they tell him is like, you can't go to the bar, you know, cause dude probably wants to get a stiff drink. Just feel like, you know, for the nerves,
he's going to first thing he's going to jump on the piano. First off, sing Great Balls of Fire. Secondly, he's going to tell all the patrons his tale of what just transpired in the air. So he's just going to be a couple shots in. He's going to be like, you know what? We just
I mean, that way you can be like, he's a fucking drunkard. He's lying. It's bullshit.
Yeah, they fucked up by doing this. They should have let him go to the bar.
And then they sent Croft, like they sent him home. And they said they're like pretty much, you don't stay there until you have to report the next morning. Like, don't go anywhere. Go home and don't say anything about this. And, you know, just there you go. So, like, just shortly after, they pretty much tell him that you need to be here at 9 o'clock the next day, where they were going to have a couple of officers from the Air Ministry Intelligence come in and debrief them separately. You know, to be like, okay, so
what did you see? Yeah. Tell us exactly what you saw. Cause they want to make sure they're not fucking lying. Probably. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that they would wait till the next day to do that though. Like, you'd want it fresh. Like, I want this now. Get it out of them ASAP.
Okay. Well, so if you're lying here, maybe here's the thought process in that. If you're lying in the sky and you say something, say like me and Dan are fucking riding in the cockpit together. And we're like, hey, let's say this.
Ghost style, right? Like, right? Not in the back seat, like he's cradling you. Yeah.
Whispering in his ear. He's like, you want to do something crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we concoct this story in the air. When we land, it's fresh.
Yeah.
So if they wait and they separate us.
Wait, I'm just still picturing you guys in that embrace.
Yeah.
Like, can we get the like Unchained Melody? Like, Julian.
The only thing different than the ghost is that, like, not only are my hands around, but also my legs.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think, like, right? The fucking, the what do you call it? It's not a stick shift. What the fuck do you call it? Right? Instead of clay, the control, it's the fucking, stick. The control stick.
Yeah. Yeah, my joystick. Hands are over his hands. Yeah. And then my legs, he's wearing my legs like a belt.
Well, and because he's, like, listen, it's only one seat, too, right? Yeah. So you're like, you're crotching the joystick. Like, it's right there, and his hands are on. Oh, it's getting fucking
steamy.
And this is how
it's getting,
and
I'm like, you Righteous wanna, Brothers you wanna, Unchained Melodies playing. Like, oh, come on.
You want to ascend?
You've been on deployment for about 9 months. Haven't seen them.
Oh, my darling.
I hunger for your touch.
As we're like going up to the moon. Dan's got a moose knuckle wrapped around the fucking joystick. But so, like, if they concoct this together, I guess the idea is you see it, they see it. Yeah. And then they land, you separate them, you give them some time because, like, you're going to fucking add shit.
Yeah, we got to split these fucking guys up. Jesus.
Yeah.
Spray him with the fucking hose.
This is a military.
And nothing to do with what they saw. Whatsoever.
You guys can't fly together anymore. You go to the cabin, not you. You go home.
Fucking broke back, fucking aircraft or whatever the fuck.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, absolutely. It's a beautiful story. We got into
fucking,
it. It's good.
In a war machine, no problem. But like the next day, like you would think that if they made it up and they didn't have time to kind of like share their story with each other anymore, they might have more discrepancies like the next morning. Like maybe that was the idea, is that if they were in the sky together, maybe some of them forgot.
Feel like now, it's given the time, right? And you'd want, like, they want to know, especially you'd imagine anytime they saw something, they didn't know what it was Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's Russian. Has to be, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but maybe it's one of those things where they can then go check the radars, check all this other stuff.
And corroborate right?
and
everything.
We're going to get back. Yeah, and then we're going to get back to you guys and ask you what you saw to see if it lines up with the other information they have, right?
Yeah, because this is back in the day when pilots see things that are crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and you're not flying anymore. Yeah, 100%.
So one of the interesting things about this is that when Suni, when the two of them were kind of recalling this event and when they had the interview with these two officials, they were saying that these guys didn't really seem all of that interested. Like they weren't, like they were telling them what they saw, but they weren't.
It's because they're too busy staring at each other, giving each other googly eyes.
No, I mean the officials like weren't really interested. Like they kind of seemed like they.
Oh, the officials. I thought they were. Yeah, the lights briefly interrupted our flight.
The officials didn't seem all that kind of like they were just writing stuff down. I think Sweeney kind of said that when he remarked on this, like his memory of this, it's that the officials didn't really. They didn't ask like a lot of like really deep information questions. They asked them just kind of like some really like very surface level questions about what did you see? Da, da, da. They didn't really get very deep into the sighting. It just seemed like they were there to kind of just check the boxes essentially.
Well, and there's no blueprint yet for like what they need to know, what they need to ask, right? Like this is all fucking new. Roswell just happened that not too long ago.
I'm sure they told him like, hey, go interview these guys because they saw something. They're like, well, what do you want us to ask him? Like, yeah. I don't fucking know. Just get out there. Like,
we haven't met anyone yet that's seen something this recent. Right. So it's like there's no playbook, right? Like I'm sure they have stuff now that they go through, but like at the time they're flying off the seat of their pants. Well, right? Also,
Andrew remarked saying like, yeah, when you see something like really weird, there's a chance of being grounded. And I'm sure like do we really want to ground an instructor like when the like in the middle of this exercise, like all of this stuff's going on? Do we really want to do that?
They're like, well, he's got nine sexual assault allegations. his flight name was Weinstein.
So you know it could be something like that where it's like, well, we need to get a report, but don't dig too deep into it, you know. And it's just like, just get what you need and then, you know, get out of there get that report. So I mean, when as soon as the officers left the base, you know, the incident was pretty much considered officially closed. Neither Sweeney or Crofts actually recall being specifically warned not to discuss the sighting. Like nobody told them, hey, you know, don't say anything or your family will disappear or, you know, any threats of any kind, or, you know, you'll lose your, if you like your pension, don't say anything, you know. But apparently like a year later after the event, the air ministry actually like issued like new instructions to all RAF stations, like warning air crew that reports of any type of aerial phenomena were considered classified.
Shut the fuck up.
And like restricted. Like, so don't talk about them.
Don't fucking say nothing.
So yeah, it was like, I mean, that one was pretty, pretty serious where you had this one. And so, again, this wasn't the only other sighting that we had. Like you had another one, which was like, this one's adds a little bit more interesting point to this whole event. So on September 20th, you know, just the next day, you had an American newspaper reporter named Wallace Litwin, who was aboard the USS Franklin D. Roosevelt, which was an aircraft carrier.
Also known as the Swanky Frankie.
Swanky Frankie.
Which we should only refer to. Yeah, its nickname was the Swanky Frankie. Yeah, and that's good name. The only thing we should refer to.
So
that's a fucking dope name for
right? I can't believe there's not a band named Swanky Frankie.
There's not? You checked?
We should, actually. I shouldn't say that. A popular band named for Swanky Frankie.
So Litwin was on board the Swanky Frankie when he said that he was attracted up onto the top deck when there was like a bit of a commotion going on. And then he said that he saw like several pilots and flight crew members like pointing at something in the sky. And when he directed his attention to like where they were pointing, he said that he saw like some type of like silver sphere in the sky that happened to be following the fleet. Like just this sphere. From this event, the Operation Main Brace, like as a whole, like we actually have some of these photos. Like some of the photos that Litwin actually took are like they're available on the internet. You can find them. Like, it's just like these pictures of what's going on.
If you're watching one of the live stream, if you're watching the live stream right now, I'll pull it up right now. This is one of them. I'm pretty sure this is the one. Can you guys see that?
It's coming right there. Yep. Yeah. And there you go.
And we're looking at the silver sphere
right
there.
That's a good picture, though.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I think there's another one down here.
Do you have ad blocker?
Do I know?
Fungi.
Again, great for toe fungus.
Is toe fungi.
No toe fungus. An absolute sweetheart on our Discord sent me a link to use their ad blocker account. They're being right here. Use this.
I was sick of seeing your toe fungus ads.
They're like, you must be so fucking embarrassed. Here, use this. I'll pull up another one when I can find it.
He took four color. He said that he took four color photos of this round object, and then at the time they just assumed it was a weather balloon. As you do back then.
Well, I mean, that's basically, one of the three. If you chase it in the sky, you were looking at a star. It was a balloon or it's swamp gas, right? Like that's the.
And so their photos made their way to the Air Force Project Chief Captain Ruppelt, everybody's favorite guy. And then, he's quoted as saying that these pictures turned out to be excellent. So judging by the size of the object and each of the successive photos, so like seeing them in sequence, like how the size, changed within, the perception of the object, he could see that the thing was moving rapidly and that the possibility of this thing actually being a balloon that launched from one of the ships, like that was kind of crossed off the list, that it's like it couldn't be one of those, because none of the units at that time out there that were participating had launched a balloon. Apparently like a poor print of one of the photographs actually appears in the Project Blue Book files, but it doesn't have any analysis report. Like it made it into the Blue Book, but it never got like kind of checked out. So it's like, it's one of those ones that kind of fell by the wayside, which we know there are tons of in Blue Book. Again, it's like fucking, Hynek and his team, like it was basically like two guys like taking taxis.
They could only investigate so many cases.
And getting all these things. And, the thing is like there might have actually been more sightings during Operation Mainbrace that didn't make it into there. Like, I mean, any of these, like during, if you had a huge operation like this, which involved like over 80,000 members, military members, 1,000 planes, 200 ships, like you probably had tons of reports coming in of just weird stuff going on. Even if it was, even the ships didn't launch a weather balloon or something like that. It's just like that you have two different UFOs, like two different in shape and size that you had. You had the disc shaped ones like flying over that area. And then you had a silver spherical one, which we talked about, the Baghdad Phantom when we talked about the silver sphere traveling across there. Things like these kinds of UFOs are not, all that. Unique in the fact that we have seen them before, like at least the silver spherical ones, like that's something that's kind of like, what are those if they keep showing up, across, multiple sightings that we've seen, especially, you wouldn't be able to see at night and most of them we see during the day, but, it's like that one's, one of these ones you had this huge operation. It's like, were these extraterrestrial crafts that were just kind of interested in like what was going on? Were they?
That's one of my things is like if this isn't Russia, just kind of like fucking around with this operation, or if it's not the States just seeing what their kind of capabilities are, which I mean could backfire greatly if like the UK were to like pick up their crafts and they're like, what are you guys doing? What is that thing? Right? And, like, it would backfire so fucking bad. How confident are we that these would be extraterrestrials and not, like Zell says, intraterrestrials, where these things are, rather than UFOs, they're USOs, right? They're coming from the
sea, the Hollow Earth.
Right.
They're Usos?
And that's why they're such an interest in that area is because the Usos, yeah, the ones. And there's such an interest. These things are interested because like all of a sudden there's like an amassing fleet again on the... in the ocean, and they're like, they're kind of popping up, seeing like what's going on.
I like that theory so much because kind of like how we have like the tribes in the Amazon that are pretty much still untouched. Yeah. There's us.
Other than the modern humans, Christian and then that shows those, up there with a Bible.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But like hardly touched. And like those people exist on this planet and they know like we're completely separated. Everything is different. And then there's just another group of humans that retreated into the planet. And it came back up after like 1,000 years. Like, oh shit. But they're way more advanced than us. And they're just researching us.
Yeah, they're like, don't contact the surface dwellers. The only thing I'll say is if the theory was that, you know, there's a breakaway human civilization that went underground, I just have a really hard time believing that they would have superior, like, propulsion crafts.
Why? They have the Hollow Earth sun. They have all the energy they need.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, yeah.
Right? Maybe they don't have fossil fuels. They had to go a different direction.
There's Hollow Earth sun.
I think you would have more fossil fuels.
In the center of the Hollow Earth, there's a sun, and that's where Agartha and all those other mythical kingdoms.
We're just scratching the surface on sun conspiracies. There's two suns in our sky right now. You don't even
Jupiter's
know.
Jupiter is about to turn into a third sun, I believe, actually.
Yeah, we're going to have three.
That's the plot of 2001 what? Space Odyssey.
No, that was Mr. Conspiracies, Space News one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that happens in...
Jupiter becomes a sun?
But this is...
Yeah, well, yeah. It becomes like a second, like a star. Like they set it into...
No, there's already two suns. People take... when you take photos through those like obsidian lenses and there's two fucking really close.
Like almost dots. Like a double.
Yeah.
So what's our Parker quite. Solar Probe doing? Just like going towards the one sun?
He picked well, the better sun.
Yeah. They're tightly orbiting. Right. Super tight that we can't tell cause it's too bright, but there's two of them.
They're just so close. One's right behind the other, but like just off by like a few meters.
It's interesting to me that you have these like military documents. It's not like we've known about this forever. Like these came out not recently, but like late '90s, early 2000s when all this came to light. So it's like, it's cool to see that we had military operations that were, you know, just like the gimbal and the Go Fast video. We've been having these kind of encounters for fucking ever. And they've just been burying them under like classified documents and stuff. And like, you know, people have been doing the work too.
Or it's like they fall just by the wayside because like I said, like this, the print of that picture of Litwin's like photos of that object, there's only one survived apparently. And it's just like, just fallen into some black hole of, you know, paperwork because like nobody gave a shit. Like, well, there was no system in place. Like there is now where it's like, you have like Arrow, kind of going in there and being like, okay, now we're figuring out a system in order to collect all of this data and these reports that are going, and we're going to keep them somewhere, you know, where they will be, they will be reviewed. They will have, we'll have a team and they'll be that review will be documented. This is how we're going to do it. If anybody hasn't watched the latest kind of update that he gave to the Senate, the Senate Oversight Intelligence Committee, you should go. Like it all sounds pretty good because you're like, oh, this is way better than having two random Air Force officials that you had like probably just picked up like, oh, it's their duty today. And like, hey, you need to go talk to this guy who said he saw something. Like, man, like really? And then they drive out there like,
yeah,
like just get a story and then come back. Like it's not a big deal and whatever. And you know, so it's better than just having that. And then it's like, it just falls into, again, like these are, but and this is also like we didn't have digital records back then, so it's like some stuff is like, you know, it ends up if you have one copy of that file, like it goes missing or something, you know, human error, which is a thing,
And to be honest, I'm like, part of me wonders, like, yes, we're supposed to keep records, but like how many records are just sort of like, we're not releasing that. Yeah. Don't get rid of it.
Or they just like reading, in a box. It's in a box somewhere in the, like in a box, like, you know, located in some random ass closet where it's like, oh, we're remodeling, you know, we're remodeling this office. So we got to clear out all this stuff. And like, no, everybody's looking at these pictures. Like, I don't know what they are. They've just been back there forever. And
it's just in one of those crates wherever all those, all Indiana Jones's fucking artifacts yeah, are
there,
hanging out.
Yeah, they're in there with the Ark of the Covenant. The yeah. Crystal Skull. Yeah. Top being reviewed by top men.
it's a really interesting, there's tons of readings on it and that you can hashtag look it up. It's a fascinating look at that. We've been having these experiences in our militaries over, like, not because it's always US. A lot of times looking to this kind of stuff, you always feel like the US military is just, it's them and the aliens. They're the only ones talking. This is a good one where it's like, you can see that we had these same alliance. Things.
Yeah. Every royal Air Force and Navy in the world was involved in this. Mm.
Yes. So it's fascinating to me that it's like, you know, we can, if you look at this in 1952 and then extrapolate to now what's been released by just the United States government, that there's got to be videos and accounts and stuff from other governments that just haven't been released and haven't been uncovered yet and are just waiting. I'm sure there's going to be tons of stuff coming out in the future.
Yep.
So yeah, if we can find more of these reports that are just like, yeah, like we said, like this was declassified relatively recently, like, you know, like 20 years ago or something, but still like these reports, there's still chances that this stuff again is locked in some random office building from the 60s that is just like, oh, it's just in here with all this other stuff. And somebody eventually goes through
it. No, maybe Dan, maybe that's what Trump had.
Yeah.
That was a secret document.
So that's in the.
So it's in somebody's bathroom on the golf course, like yeah.
No, it's in the fucking. It's in one of the Trump towers, like in the basement. He has it like top secret. Yeah, fucking.
He took all the UFO files.
On display.
Yeah.
Have you seen it though? Like he literally has in one of his hotels or some shit. He's got
a bunker,
a folder that says like White House top secret, and it's sitting in like a display case. It's hilarious.
How'd that picture get up?
Because it's in one of his businesses. Like he has it on display.
On display, just a
yeah.
It's probably a joke.
Maybe
that's a joke.
That's hilarious.
But that's what he took, and that's what all this is about. He took all the secret documents.
Well, I mean, I've seen interviews with him where he's like, they've asked him shit about aliens. He's like, I'm not an alien guy.
Yeah, don't like him.
I'm more of a whatever can help Russia kind of guy.
Yeah, but this is one of those an international incident where you had both not only just USA but you had US and British forces like seeing something up there at the same time within a short period of time that you could is relatively. I mean, you had these reports and like these things have kind of like the documents from this have been declassified, you know, luckily that we've gotten to see some of these things and we don't have all the official documentation, but it's like, again, what are we missing? There could be tons of files that just got swept under the rug or again, got lumped in with some other stuff and just never made it out. Like we had the Project Blue Book has like tons of files things that never got investigated because, you know, somebody looked at it and was like, you know, whoever they had look at it, it was like, ah, there's nothing here. Like, no big deal, whatever. You know, but just didn't record any of the, like the pertinent data, didn't put it down anywhere. They just kind of immediately just wrote it off as like, oh, this is nothing, like no big deal. You know, and then toss it off to the side. And then it's like, oh no, there could have been something in there that was like, oh no, they're like, other people have seen this too.
yeah. Let us know your thoughts. What do you think? That Operation Mainstay ran Brace. Into.
Jeez.
Main Brace ran into. What did they see? What was pacing their planes?
UFOs.
What was leaving it's radar at 1,000 miles per hour?
For sure.
At least 1,000 miles per hour. Let us know your thoughts. And you know where to hit us up. Socials, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook group, alientheorists.com. What else we got, Zell? We got a theory of the week?
We do
have a theory.
Tossing. picture is in the group.
Okay, hold on. I'll pull it up.
Pull it up.
Legend.
That's the biggest legend ever. I could not be more impressed by another human being in my entire life.
This guy.
This guy's a badass.
Full suit of armor.
Grimnar.
Grip.
I don't know what his name is. He's on our Discord as Grimnar. Grimnar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guy just casually is like, hey, anybody in the area, dude and dude, wherever the hell he is. I was like, I got a fight. And I'm like, you know, nobody really commented. I'm like, whoa, like, what do you mean fight? Like, we're talking like boxing, MMA? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're talking my language here. Like, what's going on? And he's like, no, like, he said something about like, I got to look at it. It's like real steel or something. I'm like, what?
Oh,
like,
I've heard of those.
And he's like, I like dress up in armor.
Mm-hmm. Full suit of armor.
And yep. Going a full scrap. And full I'm like, in my head, I'm like,
suit of armor. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I've seen this before. I'm like, it's pretty badass, but probably not exactly what this guy's talking about. Then he proceeds. And I was like, you got footage, man? Like, I'd love to see it. And he proceeds to post videos of him dressed in a suit of armor, absolutely fucking beating the shit out of some other dude in a suit of armor. Like, beating the piss out of him. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, this is what you want to see at medieval times. Like, honestly, we came for blood. This was blood.
When I was like, watching this was, that, I was like, I feel like that's a sport that I would be really good at.
you'd gas so fast, though.
Yeah. You have to put on 70. What's a suit of armor? Like 70 pounds?
60, 70
you'd be
pounds.
Sweating thing, so bad boys, your suit forget, would I'm fucking like a, rust.
I'm like a fuck. I'm like a Mack truck, right? Low gear all day, right? Yeah.
I don't know, dude. Anyways, Grimnar, you're an absolute badass. And he did it where he had the Pickle Baby shirt on underneath too.
Yeah, underneath. That's what gave him his power.
That's +3 to strength for sure.
Yeah, it's super Pickle Baby power.
Yeah, there's 3 Pickle Babies in that jar. So he had +9 to all stats.
Yeah, but the guy's a badass. I could not be more impressed. That was wicked.
Beauty.
He battered that dude.
Yeah, maybe I'll ask him if we can post that on our socials.
He outgassed him, and then when the guy got tired, he just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally, it's rope-a-dope.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that was a Turin thing. That's fucking awesome.
It's so
do
cool.
We have some sort of contest coming up?
Well, it's been a few years since our logo, or more specifically, our artwork of the podcast was updated. And it's fun to put out, to refresh every once in a while. So we decided that we're going to have a little competition. But the competition will be well rewarded for the first, second, and third place. So pretty much what you got to do is take our logo, make new artwork for the podcast.
Keep
the logo.
Keep the logo.
Yeah, keep it. It's classic. Right?
Keep like the abducting A we have. But then put your own spin on it. We want it in as high definition as you can. It'll be our new podcast logo. We'll use it for socials. We're going to have a first, second, and third place. So first place, it's going to be cash prize. $300 for the winner. You get $300 cash. We pay you for your art. Second place.
Pesos. Pesos. Just
300 pesos.
Pesos.
at least Canadian dollars here. All right? Yeah. You get Canadian dollars.
Everybody's doing math real quick.
Well, we'll go the currency of your... Let's do the currency where you reside.
What if you don't have dollars?
Unless you reside in somewhere with a way like, you know...
300 somethings? Like, what if they're euros? Now we're
300,
broke.
300 somethings. Yeah.
You get 300...
The euro's now.
You get Canadian dollars, all right? That's what you get.
Yeah.
But so 300 for first, 150 for second, 100 for third. But you're also going to get a little swag bag. We'll send you some merch. We're going to gift you a full subscription for 1 year to Supercast, which is just Patreon without the app. And you can still use it on any podcast player. And then winner...
You have access to all the fucking
first place,
shit.
You're also going to come on a Power Hour and unveil the logo live with your boys.
Yeah.
So we wanted to pay the artists for their work. So top one, top three.
And you will be deemed logo king.
Logo king.
Or master. Logo king, master. And, you're the logo master. And there will no longer be a meme master. It's just the fucking
logo master.
That's it. You're the
and
new
depending
guy.
How good the first place is, maybe a theorite of the year. Who knows?
So we'll keep it going. We'll keep the competition going for 4 case files from now. So it's going to be 288 After 288, we'll announce it on Power Hour.
Why don't we go? Like, should we stretch it? Because we didn't
save
we
it for
only
300.
Half hours. That's what I was going to say.
Months away.
That's fine.
Okay.
No.
That's gives crazy. You months and months to like cultivate right. a beautiful two, image.
290.
Listen, we keep it.
I like the number.
It.
Actually, I like 288. I 288. Like 288. That's a good number.
88. Yeah. We should unveil it on 300.
Okay. Well,
content. We'll hash that.
We'll hash that out, I guess.
Yeah. 288. You got
you
some
wait
time
till Christmas to unveil. To we will, but we'll figure it out. Yeah.
2030. We like our nice round number.
That's good.
All right. Well, send your designs to alientheorists@gmail.com with logo submission or something like along those lines on in the title. And we'll put you in the contest. Winner.
Yeah.
Takes the crown.
Transparent background, please.
Of course. Transparent background. High definition as you can. And we'll pay you for your art. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah. And as we always say at the end of the things, keep those eyes on the sky.
Fuck. This week's newest Patreon supporters.
Oh, shit. No. I forgot about
jeez,
that.
He got too excited.
Ooh, come on.
Bring those eyes back down.
Get those eyes down. Look at your feet. This week's newest supporters, we have Sebus, Wyatt Halliday, Carol M. Velasquez, and Dan, can you read that? What does that say?
Was it,
your pledge by CR34M. What's that normal word?
CR3.1459. Like
was it, what does that translate to?
Steve.
Your pledge by Steve.
Steve.
Oh, is that the cream pie one?
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's what makes sense. I get it.
I saw that. I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I didn't get it. I don't know. Cream pie. There you go. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they went 5 digits in the pie team. There you go.
And as we always say now at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.